afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Registered Ear Offenders. My name is Sal Rodriguez, joined with my co-host, Mr. Chris Z.
We all float back. Can you hear me?
Your mic needs to be on, Chris.
It's on.
Okay, there we go. Now it's on. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year.
Should all the acquaintance. Everything is new around here. I'm feeling great. You know what? You look like you're in good spirits, too.
I am in good spirits, Sal. This morning, I procured a new commercial agent.
Wow. So,
you may be seeing my enormous teeth on a toothpaste commercial sometime soon.
You might just get your SAG card. The way recently I become qualified for my SAG card through a national commercial, you might be next, Chris.
See, that's right. You just got grandfathered into the...
Well, no, I wouldn't call it grandfather. Grandfather would imply maybe I was an AFTRA. This is getting so niche-y here, but if I was an AFTRA, then I can be grandfathered then into SAG. But I was neither in SAG nor AFTRA. I was completely non-union. As a matter of fact, I wanted to start a union that's called the Union for Non-Union People.
I just thought when you turned 40, they let you in just out of the kindness of their heart.
I have not turned 40 yet, Chris. Don't age me. We want to remind everyone you're listening to Extreme XM 165 in collaboration with SkidRowStudios.com. Thank you for joining us on Registered Ear Offenders. My name is Sal Rodriguez. My co-host is Chris Z. Call in live if you're listening at 1-800-893-9562. And it's a happy new year, man. What'd you do over the holidays, Chris?
So much to talk about, Sal. I went home. I visited my folks. I put in about 1 week out of the year, which is usually about 3 days more than I can tolerate.
You know what? No. You know what? Your parents gave you a brand new HP laptop computer. You know what my parents gave me for Christmas? My mom gave me a lottery ticket. That's what my mom, she gave me one solitary lottery ticket.
And you know she only did that hoping you would win so that you could take care of her.
That's it. It all has its motives. Your parents are good to you, man. Your parents take care of you.
They are, dude. They're incredible people, man. It really, honestly, Sal, as I get older, what hurts me more about the fact that I haven't succeeded to the degree that I wanted to succeed is the fact that I haven't been able to kind of return that favor to them. You know, return their generosity and maybe, you know, do something nice for them for once, you know, buy them some luxury or something, you know, even though my dad probably wouldn't use it. You know,
when they come to town, do you at least treat them to dinner or something?
Yeah. I'll do something as, you know, simple as a dinner, but honestly, so I can't afford, I mean, you know, a good friend, Richard Villa, who we had on the show,
sure.
You know, recently he's, you know, he actually sold his old house and bought a new house because he wants to kind of cordon off a little room because his mother's getting old and having like a nice little, so she has kind of like her own little entrance and everything. And I just thought like, I would love to do that for my mother one day, but I can't even do that for myself.
So you're bested by a Mexican, which is quite shameful.
Really, yeah, you can tell that the world is changing, Sal, when I'm going to be a laborer building his house.
Hey, you know what? I have not had, I did not make any New Year's resolution, but I have not had any junk food at all this year at all. I have not had one cookie. I'm on a major mission to lose weight. I'm serious. I want to drop, because I watch UFC. I'm a big fan of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I would be fighting in the light heavyweight division right now. I would be fighting John Bones Jones if I were fighting in the UFC right now, and that is pathetic.
And I can attest to that because, you know, just yesterday, Sal's girlfriend is a master chef, even though she's incredibly humble about it. And she gave me his desserts. He wouldn't eat them. So she just said, Chris, take these home with you, you know.
Well, because I'm very black and white. I can't do like, oh, I just have one cookie. It's like, mm-hmm. I either have snacks in my life or I do not have snacks in my life. I'm much like people who are sober. They cannot have just one drink. I mean, I cannot have one cookie. It's like no cookies.
And in that same vein, I have ceased smoking pot because of the fact that I become a total hedonist when I do it. And I love doing it. And I love the way I feel. But I mean, I go crazy. I stomp around my apartment. I lay on the ground. You know, I just
what?
Become,
I just, what kind of pot is this?
You would not recognize, because I'm a pretty clean cut, conservative looking guy. But I mean, I love it, man. It's the only time when I'm not worried about things. Because typically all day I'm like a machine going, I got to do this, got to do this. I got to be in a better place, got to drum up more work, you know. But as soon as I like that fuse, I guess you could call it, you know, I just, everything goes away, man, you know, and nothing hurts. And
really, I wish I could find this pot. The only thing I've been searching for is the non-munchy pot. I talk to friends, I say, listen, I just want pot that will not give me munchies. And they may advise, yeah, try this kind. I have yet to find pot that will not give me the munchies. It just does not exist.
I will say this does help me on occasion. If I have a small snack before I smoke the pot, I don't get the urge to eat. But the reason I'm telling you that I quit smoking is because when I don't just get hungry, I go nuts. Like I don't nip at something. I eat like, I mean, I combine things that shouldn't be combined, you know, and I really go overboard when the faucet's on, man. I don't stop until it's out of water, you know, so I can't do it anymore, you know.
Well, somehow magically I've been smoking pot yet have not been munching out. So something in me just twisted. I'll tell you what it was. I think honestly is I spent some time up north with my sister, Karen, and her wonderful husband, Larry, and their kids, Stevie and Crystal. We went roller skating, and this was a special roller skating night. It was underwear night, so you roller skate in your underwear. So I stripped down, I roller skated in my underwear, and you know what? It was awesome. It was very freeing. It was better than a Tony Robbins walking on hot coals moment. It was invigorating. But I got to look at myself on video, and I was like, no, what? I begged my sister, take that video down. It was like Ronald Reagan, tear down this video.
That's funny. I did many, many years ago, when I was like 17 or 18, I made like a sex tape with my girlfriend. And when I saw it, it was just horrifying. I was like, hey, I can't be that white. I mean, that guy looks like a polar bear. Like, I was that white and just flabby. Like, at least now I have extra pounds on me, but I work out. So, like, there is, you know, there's some shape. There's some muscle tone there. But when I was younger, it was just all just flab. It was the most, like, I looked like probably what a young hedonistic prince would look like back, you know, in France, who had nothing to do all day but just eat and drink and fuck, you know, but maid servants, you know.
But wait a second. I have to, in your defense, say that I have witnessed something. And this is the number one trait to make a porn. I have seen your penis. And for the listeners, I just want to say, Chris and his old girlfriend did this little comedy sketch involving a magician. And you literally exposed your penis in front of the camera. And you know what? Forget your pale skin. You qualify for porn.
Yeah, I am a... I have been told that I'm slightly... the words that she used were bigger than the average bear.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, you know, I don't care. It's not like I'm, you know, it's not like I'm using the sword. It's not like I'm doing much battle with the sword very often, but it is nice to know that I have Excalibur in my belt if I should need it. So,
and speaking of sex, we have a very sexy new sound engineer. Her name is Sonia. She's joining us brand new. Now, listen, we love Nick, but it is a lot nicer to look over and see Sonia.
They are two opposite ends of the spectrum. We should, if there was ever a before and after picture, it would be like for the world's best gender reassignment surgery surgeon. You know, if you had like Nick on one side and Sonia on the other, you'd be like, look how well this doctor did. You follow me?
Well, yeah, because okay. No, but I'm thinking based on what you said, gender reassignment, you're letting the cat out of the bag. Who we got on the show today? Talk to us a little bit about who we got. What do we got on the show today?
I sensed it was a perfect lean set. We have a very unique guest today. Now those of you who follow the show know that we don't just put anybody on here, and even just being an entertainer is not enough. We typically find people that have kind of their own unique niche, either in their personal or professional lives. We have a comedian named Ian Harvey, who is not only terribly funny. I have no bias here. I was at a comedy club and I saw him perform and he did a hell of a job, and that's why I invited him on the show. But there's more to it. Aside from being a successful comic, he is, I guess transgendered is the word for it, correct?
Transgendered is the word. Now, it's not FTM. I had to do a little bit of research on this. FTM implies female to male, but he does not call himself female to male, but rather female to masculine. So I don't think he identifies as a male, actually.
And I talked to him before the show, and he's perfect.
By the way, neither do I, but that's another story.
He's perfectly comfortable discussing kind of some of the intimate details of his body and his transition, if you will. As far as I know, he does not have a penis. Because I do think it is possible for surgeons to construct a penis.
I don't know if they're constructing penises. I know that they're constructing vaginas. What they do is they take the penis and turn it inside
literally
out.
Literally, yeah. They use the inner lining of the penis as a vagina.
Yeah, but I don't think that they can make artificial penises yet.
But I don't think they're great, but I think they construct a very kind of rudimentary... you know, earthworm kind of.
Well, I'm excited, you know, because I want to talk to Ian about this concept about dual spirited. You know, the Native Americans would have considered somebody like Ian Harvey dual spirited. So I want to talk to him about the spiritual ramifications of being transgendered.
So he's Ian is working. Apparently, he's touring his new one-man stand-up comedy show titled Superhero around the country, which was filmed as a one-hour special for television. He tells me it's in the works and it should be available for soon. So he's coming up in a couple minutes. We also have sketchy characters.
Yeah,
one of my favorite segments. We also have Chris's Corner, of course, Sal's Weekly Rant, of course, and we're going to close the show, if we have time, with strangest sexual experiences.
Yeah, I'm realizing that my strangest sexual experience might actually just be the grossest sexual experience, actually.
Sometimes Sal and I share ahead of time, and he shared this with me, and I just kept staring at him waiting for the punchline, or waiting for him to say, I'm just kidding, and he wasn't kidding.
Well, because to me, you know, although we title it Strangest Sexual Experiences, to me, there's nothing strange about any sexual experience. It's only gross or not gross.
That's funny.
I mean, what's strange? Believe me, I'm a hedonist at heart. There is no such thing as strange to me. There's only, I mean, believe me, I mean, I was looking at some porn the other day, looking up midget porn. Then I wanted to look up tranny porn. Then I looked up midget tranny porn, and there was a midget tranny banging this girl. And the reason I felt so terrible watching this is that this midget tranny had a larger penis than me.
Are you sure it wasn't just perception, you know, because the small body made the penis look immense?
What? Yeah, it's like if I wanted to be taller, I'd wear those Pee Wee Herman heels and wear a pinstripe vertical suit. No, this guy had a large penis and he was a little tranny dwarf. And you know what? I can never watch tranny midget porn ever again now.
You got to hand it to a guy who's born a midget, decides to become a tranny, and rather than go, you know what, I'm just a social pariah. I'm just going to, you know, jump off a cliff or something. So they go, you know what? I'm going to go for broke. I'm going to bang strange chicks that I've never even met.
And people will allow it. You know, I know I admire people who really live their lives. Like, I actually admire people who get tattoos on their face. I admire that because I go, wow, I mean, you are going rogue. I mean, who's going to hire you? When you have a tattoo on your face, you're basically saying, I fucking do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want. And you know what? I admire that.
I'm gonna ruin my life and not even try to hide it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is some kind of weird. It's almost like when you hear about you know, these criminals. Years ago, I worked as a production assistant on a community like TV show. You know, what do you call that?
Cable access.
Yes. Yeah. And it was there was a program called Corrections in the Community, and they actually had corrections officers come in, and they came in with confiscated weapons. And when you saw some of the ingenious shit that some of these guys had handcrafted, you begrudgingly admired them. And you almost wish that they had become legitimate businessmen, because they probably would have been entrepreneurs. They would have been, you know, leaders. They could have opened up, you know, a homemade weapons shop. I don't know. These guys were good.
They could have their own episode of What If.
They peeled lead-based paint off the wall and spent hours rolling into a ball that was about the size of a golf ball, but it's lead, so it weighs a ton, and it's hard as hell, and you can bash somebody in the head with it. You can, you know.
Well, the interesting thing you learn is what you can, what talents you realize you have when you have time on your hands. For example, one time I went on this long road trip. We camped out for several nights at the Grand Canyon. So there we are, Grand Canyon camping. I picked up this stick. I started whittling. I literally whittled an eagle's head on the edge of the stick. When the hell before or since have I fucking carved wood? Never. But all of a sudden, I realized I was sort of a mild artist carving an eagle's head, because I had all this time on my hands. We're fucking sitting around a campfire.
It actually sounds like a sketchy character. You know? a guy who whittles for the first time, he becomes a genius artist. You know,
he'll be like Rodin at the campsite.
Yeah. A week later, people are flocking in droves to his campsite to buy his creations.
You know what? I just want to mention something before we get into sketchy characters. Registered Air Offenders is here on Skid Row Studios every Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll also be rebroadcast every Sunday, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Extreme XM 165. And of course, always available for download on iTunes and available for easy listening on skidrowstudios.com.
Cool, man. I guess we should get into things. We don't want to fall behind, because I definitely want to talk to this guest, and hopefully we'll have enough time to maybe even go over his allotted time. But we do have, we're going to start with Holiday Hell. Sal, I'm going to run down. Oh, we're going to can it? Shit, can it. Okay.
we got to stay on schedule, man. We went through Holiday Hell. We're going right into Sketchy Characters.
Perfect.
And now Sketchy Characters presents The Devil's in the Details.
Keep the line moving. Have your identification in your hand. A search of your persons and possessions may be required.
I can't do this. You must. Remember what the Imam said. Your rewards in heaven will outnumber the stars. Fatted calves to feed you. 72 virgins to serve you.
If he's so sure of a martyr's place in paradise, why isn't he standing here with bombs strapped to his chest?
Insolent fool. Bite your tongue before heresy costs you a place in Jannah.
You, in the trench coat, Step out of line.
It's too late to turn back now, Mahmood. Will you die a martyr or a dog?
No, it's not too late. I can build things.
You are not the builder. You are but a block in the builder's hands.
But I can do more good alive than dead.
I said step out of line.
It's now or never, Mahmood.
Lay on the ground now.
Inshallah!
Many names, but that is not one of them.
Where am I? Where are my 72 virgins?
Oh, they're I soon. They're young and fair, and not one has ever known a woman in the biblical sense.
Known a woman? You mean my virgins are boys?
Of course. What kind of hell has girls in it?
Hell? That's impossible! I followed the Quran to the letter.
Did you? You follow the words of a book that you can't even read? Honor rapes? Jihad? No ham? Sounds like something I would write, doesn't it? If you'll excuse me, I'm expecting Dick Cheney any minute.
But I was only following orders!
If I had a nickel for every time I heard that line, I'd be Bono.
Wait, please. If I'm condemned to eternal damnation, why offer me 72 boys to deflower?
You don't get to do the deflowering.
No!
You know, Chris, that guy's version of hell was being deflowered by 72 male virgins. To some people, that would be their idea of heaven.
I suppose it does matter which, who the boys are. There's always that question.
Where the boys are. Chris, are you trying to get us killed by Islamic militants with a sketch like that? What the hell is going on here?
I had nothing to do with it, Sal. This is sketchy characters.
I know, we found these old things. But you know what? One thing I never understood about these Islamic militants is they get upset about a cartoon, and instead of then creating a counter cartoon, they kill. I mean, if you're upset about a cartoon, make your own cartoon. You know, that's what I think.
Well, the thing is, some of these people where these riots took place, their countries are so backwards that they don't understand the concept of freedom of the press. Like, they don't understand that the Danish newspaper who initially published these cartoons, they live in a free country. They live in, you know, a first world country. And so they don't, probably to them, it just appeared to be just intentional slander, you know. And also it's important to mention, not a lot of people know that those cartoons were supplemented. When they made their way to the Arab world, people added additional cartoons that were intentionally offensive that never appeared in the original Danish newspaper. And
really?
So they helped incite these riots by, you know, basically, I don't know what you call that. There's got to be a word for that, but basically by making it look a lot worse than it actually was. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess what I want to remind our listeners is that if we are not here next week, we were beheaded.
Once again, guys, if you intend to look me up to blow me up, know that I'm homeless at the moment.
That's right. Chris is couch surfing at the time. Chris, go ahead and introduce our guest, man. I'm excited to have our guest come on to the show.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief, man. He honed his skills in Portland and Boston comedy clubs, and he moved to the West Coast in 2006. He produced and appeared in his own self-titled, critically lauded The Ian Harvey Show, which has been running since April 2007 at the famed music and comedy club called Largo in Los Angeles. A lot of entertainment history at Largo. You can find Ian touring his new one-man stand-up show titled Superhero Around the Country. It's filmed as a one-hour special for television and should hit the airwaves soon enough. Ian will tell you a little bit more about it himself. Please welcome our guest for today, Ian Harvey.
Wow. Thank you very much. Ian Harvey, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, guys?
How do we do on the intro, Ian?
The intro was fine, but all the stuff you were saying before, I was like, oh, that's wrong. That's wrong. Oh, you don't want to say it that way. No, you don't want to say tranny. No, you don't want to say transgendered.
Please, I'm mad enough to admit that I am so out of my element on this.
Which is totally fine. It's totally fine. I'm here to tell you what the proper way to say things. This is totally fine.
I'm not gonna get on your ass
about it. It's not transgendered. There has been some discussion about whether it should or shouldn't be that way, but it's really just transgender with no ED on the end.
Yeah, because you can't change someone's gender. Well, right? Transgendered would imply that someone's gender was changed, and you really can't change someone's gender, can you?
It's mostly just the people who are transgender have decided that that's a weird word. Mm-hmm. and that it doesn't really make sense if you think about it. Transgendered is kind of like maybe a past tense or a,
yes.
It's weird. It's kind of a, you know, you don't say gayed.
But so let me ask you though.
I'm sure there are some people somewhere that say it. Them gay folks.
Gayed.
Yeah, G-A-Y-E-D. I don't even claim to understand regular women. So please teach me, brother. Preach on.
Also, the tranny word has been, it's kind of like the N word. It's like the
really?
You know, people of color's N word in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. And although it's like, you know, people of color can use that word if they want to.
Sure.
And I think that trans people can use that word if they want to, mm-hmm. but people sort of outside the community shouldn't.
I'm not in the community because I have occasionally indulged in tranny porn.
doesn't make me an honorary member.
Yeah, I'm not on the outskirts, you know?
Well, if you enjoy it and maybe you enjoy it to an extent that you might consider yourself maybe a lover of...
An enthusiast, a trend.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I am as much of an enthusiast that I do know about Buck Angel and Alana Starr, to name a few. You have worked with Buck Angel, I understand?
Well, I haven't worked with
him. Well, but I mean, well, wait a second. You have some sort of professional relationship?
He's a friend of mine.
Okay.
And actually, I met him at a porn conference in Florida years and years ago. And
a porn conference?
Yeah. It was like, you know, it was like...
This meeting has been...
Yeah. It was, well, you know what? It was like a trade show, if you will. And he was there. And it was early on in his career. And... And I was thinking about building adult websites back then. And it was probably maybe 11, 12 years ago. I met him anyway. But I was like, hey, like you, we're kind of like the same. But I also had not had any surgery. My voice wasn't this low. I had big old girls on my chest. I had some, you know, big old titties going on. And he was like, great to meet you, dude. And, you know, keep me posted. And even weirder, I moved to Los Angeles. And one of my best friends here... Who's also a little person, not a midget, by the way. A little person. Another word. You're like dropping transgender, tranny, and midgets like all over the place earlier. And I was like,
we are being corrected, Chris.
So do they prefer Oompa Loompa?
Little person. And anyway, but my friend Selene, who's a comic and a great burlesque star, is like best friends with Buck. And so we were in a dressing room together on a show for like months and months and months off Broadway in New York together, and we're chit-chatting back and forth, and she's like, my friend Buck, and I'm like, there's only one dude named Buck.
Yeah.
That I, you know, anyway, so.
Whoa. Hey.
Why do I do that?
Anyway,
we just traveled in time, guys.
We did.
Don't be alarmed. Bro.
Anyway, so Buck is a friend of mine. He came on my show, on the Ian Harvey show, and we talked about him winning like the biggest gay porn award you can get for trans people, for a transsexual porn star, and how his parents were proud of him, and he just made a film called Sexing the Trans Man, and I actually participated in an interview in that, but basically that's kind of like a lot of trans guys having sex with interviews interspersed.
Talk to us about that. So Buck Angel, and this will segue obviously into you, but Buck Angel has sex with, prefers men or prefers women, and then do you prefer men or do you prefer women for sexual encounters?
I can't speak for Buck. I know that he is partnered. He has a female partner, Elaine, who's awesome. But I think primarily in his porn, he fucks gay guys.
Gay men fuck. But then when I saw Alana Starr, who's a transsexual, male to female transsexual, fucking Buck Angel. Now that was interesting. That was very interesting.
I bet that was. I haven't
You've
seen
never
that.
Seen that?
No, I'm going to
Alana Starr fucking Buck Angel. It was one of the most amazing things I've seen. And by amazing, I mean just interesting. I enjoy looking at interesting things.
Yeah, you know what? I think once I started taking testosterone, I started watching the craziest porn. It's one of the side effects of taking testosterone. If you're not familiar with some of the side effects, it does make you watch porn. And
if there's no computer around? What are you supposed to do?
You just pace in circles. Yeah.
You go to your local shop that has the old, you know, greasy DVDs on the rack.
Whoa, and slimed.
But anyway, I started watching porn, and I've seen all kinds of stuff, and I've watched Buck's stuff, which is actually kind of funny, like, because he's a friend of mine, and I've seen a lot of his stuff. And to look at somebody who's done that and to also know them and like just have like coffee with them is really, it's weird. It's kind of a
I ask you, because I haven't, I think Sal has seen more, I know who Buck Angel is. But,
I've seen more tranny, I've seen more trans porn than you have.
Yeah. Does nice, Buck, Sal. When you mentioned that these gay men are having sex with Buck Angel, do they use his vagina or his anus?
I think he's strictly vaginal, pretty sure.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so let's cut to the chase. Do you, Ian, do you date men or do you date women?
I have a girlfriend. Okay. And we live together, and I have always dated girls. And it's funny, but again, after taking testosterone, I just started sexualizing everybody.
Yeah. And it's a curse. It's a curse, Ian.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even that I want to necessarily, you know, fuck guys. It's just that everybody's hot to me now. Everybody.
Well, thank you.
Like just, you can find something about everybody. You're like, yeah, I could probably, you know, I could probably work with that.
Can you loan me some of that testosterone to slip in Sonia's drink?
I think Chris is considering taking testosterone enhancement. I believe you've mentioned.
Dude, it sounds by your weapon, as you discussed earlier, you probably don't need any testosterone, I'm guessing. So based on
the sword is there, but I need a stronger man to wield it.
That's good. Hey, listen, believe me. I mean, the fact that you're a transgender person is very interesting, but you're obviously a comedian as well. And that's the main reason why you're on. Let's go ahead and play a clip.
And a fine one at that, so.
Yeah, okay, so let's go ahead and play a clip of Ian Harvey performing at the Improv.
I'm queer. I'm not exactly the kind of queer that you might think, though. Straight people are going to want to lean in on this shit. I am transgendered. I was born a girl. So I am the T in the GLBT community. Yeah, thank you. I like it when people clap at that because it makes me feel like proud, like a superhero. Like I should have like a nylon suit and a cape on up here right now, like camel toe or something, and a big T on my chest. And I don't know what my superhero powers would be. I don't know what I'd fly in your window at night and fuck you. I don't know. So, that'd be weird. That'd be just great. I don't know what like my kryptonite would be either. It would be like my boobs in a jar. People think I'm joking when I say that I'm transgendered and I used to be a girl. Like I have to say, I don't go just travel to the Inland Empire and tell random groups of people that I'm a tranny. Because that would be fucking safe. So it's true. If you don't believe me, Google it. You know, not right now, but Google it and check it out. I had the great pleasure of coming out twice to my parents. Yeah, the first time I came out to my parents, I said, Mom, Dad, I like girls. And the second time I came out to them, I said, Mom, Dad, I still like girls, and I want to be a dude. You can imagine how that went over. Science is trying to figure out why people like me maybe feel like they were born in the wrong body or the wrong shell, if you will. And I figured it out for me. It's not science or genetics or biology. I really want to pee my name in the snow. And what I got ain't quite cutting it. I mean, this would be fine if my name was Here's what's happening now, my poor girlfriend. My poor girlfriend and I pass as a guy all the time, but I pass as a gay guy all the time. And when we go out, my girlfriend and I know I look like the last fucking member of Wham up here right now. I'm so baggy, I know. It doesn't bother me. But I feel bad for my girlfriend because we'll go out and we'll hang out at gay bars and I'll hold her hand. I know that gay guys are looking at me and then they look at her and they go, oh, that poor girl. he is gonna break her heart right now. Yeah. And I'm gonna help. I feel bad for my girlfriend. But here's what happened the other night. We were out, and went up to the bar to get a drink, and this guy started chatting me up. But let me just tell you, I have never been hit on by a guy before, and it was totally new for me. And as a dyke with, you know, the girls, I never got hit on by a guy. Just never. It never happened. And so it's all new, and I don't really know how to deal with it. So this guy started chatting me up, and I was like, oh, dude, listen, I'm sorry. I just got to tell you, to be honest. I'm transgendered, I'm female-bodied, and I like girls. And he was like, oh, that's cool. And he started to walk off. He's like, had this revelation. He's like, wait a second. I was like, what's that? He's like, you mean you have two holes to choose from?
That's Ian Harvey performing at the Improv. Was that in Hollywood?
That one was at the Brea Improv.
The Brea Improv. Yeah. We want to remind everybody you're listening to Registered Air Offenders on SkidRowStudios.com. Also, Extreme XM 165 in collaboration with SkidRowStudios.com.
God damn it. Sorry about that. Let me ask you real quick. When you started kind of becoming successful, as in graduating from open mics, maybe quitting your day job, whatever the case may be, was it based on the nature of your stand-up act and talking about these personal things? Because, that's a big thing nowadays where they have, like, you know, the axis of evil, and they purposely select all these comedians are from the Middle East.
Yeah,
whatever.
But you know what, though? Everybody, I know what you're saying. Like, is it because I'm an identity comic? And I think that everybody is an identity comic. Everybody who is a comic has their thing. Like, Jerry Seinfeld talked about nothing. That was his thing. And, you know, my thing happens to be about my gender and my sex. And that's what I talk about a lot, but I don't think that is the reason necessarily, but I do think that it's interesting enough to have propelled me somewhat. The other thing is that some of it hasn't propelled me, you know, in some ways. Like, there's some people who are like, oof, I don't think our club goers can handle this.
That was my next question.
You know, I think that a lot of people are like, I think it's funny, but I don't know if they'll think it's funny, you know? So I think people get really worried about, you know, but the thing is like, I mean, you happen to see me. And so at
Flappers.
At Flappers. And it was one of those things that, like, I mean, you thought it was interesting enough. You weren't freaked out by it. And I think that it actually is really accessible by everybody. And what I thought when I first came out is what I thought about coming out as trans. I also thought about on stage, too, is that I thought, oh, my God, people are going to eat me alive, you know, if I tell people that I'm trans. Not only that, but if I tell people that I'm trans on stage. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be. But the truth is, if you're comfortable with it, people will be comfortable with it. And that it becomes, and if you just tell your story, then it's inarguable. You know, it's different than an opinion. What happened to me, and that's my story. You can't argue with my story. You can't argue with who I am. You can argue with, we can argue politics and religion and all kinds of other things, but you can't argue with that point. So I just get up there and share my story, and hopefully I make some funny points about it. And I think that that's probably what's grown me as a comic. But I also, what really propelled me was meeting Margaret. I met Margaret Cho, and she has a huge queer fan base, and she picked me up and she took me with her for about 3 years, and we went all over the world, and she gave me her fans, and it was really incredible. And she's one of the most generous comics in that way, and not afraid. Someone said to her one time, she said, aren't you afraid that someone's going to steal your thunder? And she's like, they can have my thunder. Anybody who wants it can have it. And it's one of those moments that you're like, that's why she's different. And she, you know, she takes people with her and lifts people up and, you know, lets them have her audience too. So
you use the word queer. Are Chris and I allowed to use the word queer?
I think queer is becoming more of a mainstream term for, for the LGBT community as a whole, as opposed to. So I say, yeah, I say, yeah. I also think this is the thing. It depends on context too. Context is key, you know, like, and you know what, if we were talking off air, it's you guys and I, we would probably, you know, be saying different things. We probably would be saying, you know, a tranny and that kind of thing. And I think it's different in private circles as opposed to public forums. It's different. So,
well, I have a question for you, Ian, because I do consider you are a resident expert for today. I'm of Mexican heritage. Mm-hmm. And from our understanding as someone of Mexican heritage, if I have a man blow me, not gay, not gay. If I blow him, gay. What do you think of that?
Richard Villa had explained that concept to me, and I thought he was kidding.
You know what? Here, I'm becoming of the mind that maybe thinks that who you fuck does not necessarily what makes you gay. I think sex is sex, no matter who you have it with, and it doesn't matter. I don't think it necessarily makes you gay or straight or whatever. I think it's who you want to partner with and who you maybe prefer to be with in like sort of long-term relationships. And I think that that can ebb and flow. I think that it can be something like you might want to be partnered with a guy for a while you're fucking chicks. Like, and I don't, you know, you might consider yourself gay and also like pussy. I don't know. Like, I just think that it's getting so blended and that it kind of doesn't matter anymore. It's also not for me to say gay or not gay. I heard though in prison though, if you're in prison under 10 years and if you have sex with a guy, if you're in prison under similar rule, if you're in prison and you have sex with a guy and you're in there for under 10 years, then you're gay. But if you're there longer than 10 years on one stint, and you have sex with a guy, then you're not gay.
10 years? That's like a long... I would be like, well, can we just make it like 2 years? I mean...
I'm actually the one who postulated that rule. I put it into effect.
Oh, that was you? That was you.
And I've never even been to prison. I just...
What, the 2 year rule or the 10 year rule?
The 10 year rule. No, that's funny. What if you forget it? Like it's leap year? Like, oh, you had one day left, queer.
Well, because the reason I ask questions like this, for example, I'm a heterosexual. My girlfriend's a heterosexual, but I'm a little feminine. I think she's a little masculine sometimes. So it's almost like our relationship is a little transgender.
Yeah, I think that that's possible. I think that's totally possible. And also, I think that's really awesome. And I think this is, when I first came out, I thought I was the only one that felt this way, you know? And then I realized, I'm like, everybody has something about themselves that they're maybe feeling a little inadequate about their gender. Some you were talking about height. I heard you talking about height earlier. Like,
yes, I envy Chris, because Chris, how tall are you, Chris?
6'1".
Chris is 6'1", I'm 5'8".
So... I'm 5'9", and it's one of those things that people equate height with masculinity. People equate, you know, levels of masculinity. Like there's guys, I met a comic who's a Latin guy. He couldn't grow sideburns and he was pissed at me because I had sideburns. And, you know, so there's like certain things that people don't feel enough about. And then I started to realize, when I first came out, I thought I was the only person that felt this way. And I looked around, I was like, oh my God, everybody has something. Like women,
everybody has something.
Women are getting breast augmentations to feel more feminine in their bodies. I just took mine off to feel more masculine. What's the difference? We're doing it for the same reason. We just don't call it the same thing. We're just not calling those women trans, you know? So I just started to align myself with everybody. And so I think what you're talking about is everybody has these feelings. That's all. Everybody, you know, has like a sort of a continuum or a scale, or one day they're feeling really butch and one day they're feeling really femme, you know? It just ebbs and flows.
Well, then I just have to say publicly that I would never get a blowjob from a man unless he were extremely thin and effeminate.
Ian, I want to ask you, how did you come to the conclusion growing towards masculinity would satisfy some inner need? Like, how did you finally put two and two together where you said, you know what, for me to be happy, for me to feel whole, whatever it is, what motivated you to this choice?
Well, there was
choice?
It was kind of like, I mean, as a kid, I mean, I always knew a lot. You see like talk shows and things like that. I always knew as a kid that I was very masculine. I always knew that there was something different about me. I always associated myself with the boys. I ran around with my shirt off and it was really hard. Even when I started to develop, I was really pissed that I had to put a shirt back on. And then my body started to shift in like puberty and like 12, 13 and that sort of thing. And then I got these huge girls and I was so, I had so much grief about my chest and, I never could put my finger on it. And I always considered girls the other to me. Sort of my opposite or my inverse sort of thing.
The way I feel about the human race.
Yes, exactly.
So I always knew that it was different. And then it just grew into this. At first I thought it was because, you know, I like girls. And then later I realized it was really primarily related to my body and how I identified with my body. And, you know, I heard you guys talking earlier. I've had chest surgery, but I haven't had lower surgery. And I haven't had anything like that done. But it actually is not one of the things that really was grating at me. My chest was really bothering me. I really wanted a flat chest. I had triple D's. I had big old girls. And I don't know if there are big, large chested purse people out there, if you ever wanted to know what that shit weighs, there's no scale for that sort of thing. And so I went to the Whole Foods and went to the produce section.
No way.
There. turns out you can't do that shit at Albertsons. But anyway, it's one of the, I've been carrying around an Olsen twin on my chest, you know, for so long. And, but that was the thing that really grated at me. And that I always looked at myself and I always thought I was supposed to have facial hair. I was supposed to like be able to shave. I was supposed to have a flat chest and I was supposed to have this voice. And I knew, as I did more research, I knew what I needed to do to get that was to go on testosterone to have chest surgery. But I always knew from when at time when I was little, but it was, the rest was sort of piecemealed to me in this life process that, you know, a lot of people are like, do you ever feel like you're robbed or born in the wrong body? I actually don't feel like I was robbed. I'm grateful, you know, I'm grateful that I've had both these lives in a sense of, you know, having been socialized a girl and also, you know, having like learning this new life of, you know, having testosterone, you know, streaming through my body and thinking about things that I didn't used to think about. And also having a temper that I didn't have before. There's some things that, I don't have a bad temper, but there's some things that are different now. So I'm grateful for all of it. And I
think you were ready to punch Chris when he said midget.
I didn't say, you said it.
You said it.
You initiated it by
But you, you repeated it.
By publicly admitting the vile shit you were...
Hey, listen, we got to get into our next segment, but Ian, please stick around because we'd love to have you join us in our final segment, which is Strangest Sexual Experiences. And I'm hoping that Ian's Strangest Sexual Experiences will trump ours.
You know what, Sal? I got to do this, buddy.
Vanilla.
I'm so into this interview, man.
You're going to skip Chris's corner?
Forgo my comedy corner. I'd like to ask Ian a couple more questions. Wow.
Chris will be foregoing Chris's corner.
That is unprecedented. Luckily for you, Ian, that we only have an hour long show because I think I could do this all day. I wanted to ask you about the money, the financial, I mean, that it must cost. I honestly couldn't even guess how much it would cost.
I think that, you know, the cost and for me, this is an individual, but it's different to every individual. But for me, I went to therapy for a really long time talking about all this stuff. And I'm in recovery. I used to drink a lot over it. And so I stopped drinking. I went to therapy and started getting honest with what was going on with me. So the cost of therapy was fairly expensive, but it's not necessary. But then the biggest expense that felt so overwhelming and I thought, oh my God, I will never have what I want was chest surgery. It's really expensive. You know, if you want a breast augmentation to add some shit, you know, it costs like anywhere between $3,000 and $6,000. But to have chest surgery, it costs anywhere between $6,000 and probably $12,000, depending on who you go to.
Just to be clear, that's what the reduction costs more than the augmentation.
Well, absolutely. It's not a reduction. Would it be officially a mastectomy?
Yeah, basically, yes. And they take your old nipples, they make small nipples out of them into masculine, smaller nipples. And then they take out the stuff inside, they stitch it back up, and I'll show you, but I'm a little chubby in that you were talking about your weight, but this is, I mean, it's pretty...
Wow.
It's not bad.
Your nipples get a little bit of length on the nipples. You know, I've always envied people that had larger nipples because there's been a couple of girls in my life that have tried to mess with my nipples. And after a few minutes, I was like, nothing.
Well, so I had the surgery. It was, and it depends on who you go to, that it is expensive. And I think that that's probably one of the things as a trans person out there, one of the most frustrating thing is that once you know who you are and you are certain of what you want for yourself, the expense for that sort of thing, no insurance company covers it. It's not funded by anything. It's nothing you can go to your employer and say, you know, I'd like to add this to my policy. There's nothing like that. So that can be really frustrating. And for a lot of people out there, I mean, there's just no way to save for that. I know people who have gotten college loans and used it for surgery. I know people who have, you know, done like really creative financing to get it done. But anyway, that was the one thing for me that was... Now, the lower surgery for me, as I said, it's one of the things that's not important to me. It is important to some guys. But that can be, I think, anywhere between, you know, 15 and 40 grand, depending on what you want done.
Now, wait a second. What would that be? You say the lower surgery. What would that entail?
It would probably be what they call phalloplasty, where they take... they make a penis out of... parts of your soft tissue of your, maybe your inside of your arm or your inside of your thigh, and they graft together a phallus that they would reroute your urethra. And, you know, I don't know all the exact science of it, but the basics, that's the basics. And
then they put a pump in there so it can become erect?
You know what? That's a question. I think that that is the case, but the risks with that are a couple things. One is it's not optimal yet, and that, it's one of those things that a lot of guys really feel it's important to them, and they really feel like that they need to have that done. And I totally support them. But it's not necessarily optimal in that it may or may not stay on your body, which is like any skin graft. Like if you were
like your body could reject itself, sort of. Right?
Kind of like if you have a any sort of transplant or skin graft. If you're a burn victim and you might have a skin graft, then it may not stay. I mean, my nipples might not have stayed. I mean, so that's something that like when they redo that kind of stuff, there's a risk in that kind of thing. So if you're willing to do that risk, you have the money and you're willing to do that risk, and it's very important to you, which I totally support that, then people should do that. But it's also very expensive, and that can be very depressing if you something you really want, but you don't know how you're financially going to do it. So people do fundraisers all the time. People do, I've done benefit shows. I took a naked photo of myself and put my dog between my legs and did a photo to benefit someone's surgery. It went on like this calendar that was sold. That anyway, but people are just trying to think of any way possible to raise money for the surgeries that they need. So
I wanted to ask, were you working a regular job when you went through this process? And did it, I mean, did you ever have to sit down with your employer and go like, hey, shit's going to change in the next couple months, you know?
No, in fact, and
yeah, how old were you when you went through the, started the process?
I started the physical transformation 5 years ago this past December. So like 5 years ago, 5 years and a couple weeks ago. And
you look more manly than me. See, these are the kind of things that piss me off. If someone were to say, if someone were to look at the two of us and say, who is transgender, they would choose me.
Not necessarily, but you know, I think that what it is too, is that as, I don't know how old you are, but as men age, their testosterone lowers, but I inject the same amount every week. So as men start to age, you notice that they start to look like old women. Have you seen this? You know what I'm saying?
I always thought it was the old man starting to look like his wife, is what I thought it was.
I do think that too. I think there's a lot of DNA exchange going on and women start to look more masculine and men start to look more feminine as far as, you know, features and that sort of thing. But I don't know what I don't know if they would pick you or me in that quiz. But anyway, what were you, Chris? What were you saying before that?
I guess my question was: it doesn't sound like, because you said you've been in a long-term relationship for a while, and if I remember your act correctly, you were already in a relationship when you made your announcement to your partner.
I've been in relationship. I've known I was trans for a really long time. I've known for like the last 12 years. That was my language, that's me. I met a guy and I was like, I had been struggling to figure out what it was, that itch that I couldn't scratch. What was it about me that I couldn't name? And then I met a trans guy and I was like, holy shit, that's me, that's me, that's me. And then after that, I started thinking about, okay, what sort of things do I want to do? The first thing I did was I changed my name, and which is funny because my mom still calls me by my birth name, which she's not trying to be mean, it's just out of habit. And so like, we'll be out public places and she'll, you know, say things. She'll be like, Janet, come here. And she'll be at the register and I come trotting up and I know she looks like a crazy crazy old lady to the person at the register. But so I think that there was probably like two or three relationships that I had where they knew, and that for other reasons and different reasons, we split. And then the partner that I'm with now, we were friends first and she knew everything before. So there was no sort of like surprise, you know, but I knew, and I didn't know all of the steps that I wanted to take in order to be what you see before you, like to be this bearded, you know, guy with a flat chest. So I didn't know what I wanted to do at first, but I transitioned entirely on stage. I didn't have a boss at the time. I went sort of full-time comedy about, I would say, 6 or 7 years ago. And I was where I was making primarily all my money through doing stand-up. But before that, I worked for myself. I had a web development company that I did, you know, since 1996. So I hadn't worked for anybody for a really long time. So I didn't have anybody, but I did come out to one client via email, not as a trans person, but just that I had changed my name. And I sent out an email to all my clients and I said, just want you to know that I changed my name from Janet to Ian. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact me. No one wrote back to me anything weird. Everybody was like, great, thanks, Ian. Except one person wrote back and said, isn't that a boy's name? And that's all they wrote.
Do you have a 9-year-old client?
That's a boy's name.
I know that. It was really adolescent. But anyway.
Sal, I'd love to continue this interview, but if you're going to do your rant, you gotta do it now.
Now I'm the asshole if I'm going to do my rant?
No, you know what? Do your rant.
Do what you feel is best for the show.
You guys are awesome.
I'm going to do my rant. It's a short one.
But I just want to say this.
We're going to come back. We're going to come back. Yeah, we're going to come right back. Okay. There's a short rant, ladies and gentlemen. Sonia is so on the ball. She started it. I wasn't even ready. And yet she was ready. On Christmas Eve, 13 years ago, I got down on one knee in the privacy of my living room and proposed to my girlfriend. Little did I know, I was a complete asshole. One of the most recent requests after a couple's announced their engagement is, how did you propose? I was driving down Ventura Boulevard in Encino yesterday and could not help but notice the giant roadside billboard with an artist depiction of a couple on it and the phrase, Susan, will you marry me? How about these guys proposing at the stadium or during halftime on the Jumbotron at the basketball game? When did an intimate moment between two people become a public spectacle? No one is impressed by a proposal unless it's big, expensive, and public. The more elaborate, the better. We were at the pyramids, and I rode in on a camel, followed by four slaves, each one with the individually phrases painted on them, will you marry me? She was having lunch with her girlfriends, and I skydived from 10,000 feet onto the patio dressed as Luke Skywalker, and on my lightsaber was the phrase, Janice, will you marry me? These exhibitionist assholes, what the hell are they going to do throughout their marriage to keep up this standard? Will they go through the same ego-driven methods to announce the birth of their children? When Jaden was born, we had each person at the mall dress as a stork and carry a little dolly with Jaden's name written on it in calligraphy. I'd like to see the divorce statistics on these self-obsessed idiots who need to exclaim to the world that they're proposing. Hey, assholes, no one cares. Go take a ride through the park on a bicycle built for two, have a picnic lunch, and while your girl twists her parasol, you can get down on one knee in private the way it was meant to be. I do look forward to the day when we see gay proposals on YouTube. Because when one person proposes to another man, and that man says no, publicly humiliating the asker, we might see something I've been waiting for years. Someone getting punched in the face. That was Sal's Weekly Rant. Thanks for indulging me.
So we're back. That was Sal's Weekly Rant. It's a mainstay of the show. We got to do it. The fans will riot if we don't.
You're almost excusing me. What you're doing.
No, I'm glad. It was good. I agree.
We got about 8 minutes, and we're gonna just keep rapid firing questions at Ian here, who's been kind enough to share.
Wait, are we skipping strangest sexual experiences?
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought that's what we were doing. It's up to you.
Are you? Are we skipping that?
You're in the captain's chair today. Well, fucking, you make the decision.
I'm in the captain's chair. I say let's go ahead and skip it. If we get into sex, we get into sex. But that's okay. Fine.
Cool. I did want to ask you because it sounded like from what I heard on stage, which again could be accurate or not, or your partner was completely supportive of your decision.
Absolutely. Yeah. She knew beforehand. We were friends. She was very supportive ahead of time. I think I was more nervous about my transition than she was, in that she definitely was like, listen, whatever you need to do. And she, you know what? I think she's probably pretty rare. I don't think that she's typical, kind of partner. She's one of these people that's like, yeah, makes sense. Do it. You know, she's very, very infrequently rocked by any new information. She's one of these people that's just solid as shit. And it's not a really nice compliment, but solid as shit. She's just
is she
solid.
Also is she built like a brick shit house?
She is.
But let me ask you this: so you were with a woman. Mm-hmm. You were a woman with a woman.
Yep.
Then you start to create a
visually.
Okay, so you start to create the physical appearance to create visually a man. Does she say, "Well, you know what? I'm attracted to the look of a woman, though."
Well, I think. She had dated men. She had dated women. I think that she's probably one of those people that's like, I love who I love, and I'm attracted to whoever I'm attracted to. And that I do think that she tended to be more attracted to masculine sort of personalities. And the girl that she had dated before me was maybe sort of a long haired butch. And so I think that her sort of essence was probably more masculine, although she maybe didn't look it at first glance. But so I think historically she's been attracted to masculine people, and I think that their genitalia has varied.
Do you know people who have lost their partner, or maybe their parents have written them off?
Absolutely. Which it's really common. People don't know how to approach it. They don't know what to do with that. I do think that partners, there are some, people who are very staunch lesbians who are like, I don't want to be with a man. If their butch partner or somebody, the person that they're with decides that they would like to transition, that they then have an identity crisis about what that means about them. And I respect that. I just, I don't necessarily think for me, whoever I date changes my identity. And that's back to your conversation about if you get a blowjob from a guy, does that make you gay? Either way, him or you, I don't think it does. I think you are who you say you are, regardless of what you do in the sack or who you do it with. So I think that people get really hung up on, and I think it's okay to get hung up on it in the discussion of, does my identity change when I date this person? What does that mean?
But it's not only a question of identity. Like, for example, if my girlfriend, who I love very much, if she were to transition into the male image, I will still love her. I'll always love her, but I'm not attracted to the visual appearance of a male.
Well, I mean, and that's for you to decide. And that's, it's like totally individual. Well,
so your girlfriend was open. Your girlfriend was open to, well, to either appearance.
I think my girlfriend was open, but I also think that she probably, because she had met me and we talked about it before we started dating, she probably had some sort of vision of what that might be like in her head and to be able to sort of make that decision for herself. But one of the things that she didn't bargain for was my whiskers. She's like, you know what? You need to trim that shit back. Like, I don't like feeling like I'm kissing a caterpillar. So I have to, and I mean, it's just out of respect, when you like grow a little bit of a beard, is your girlfriend like, oh, you know what? Keep that, you know, I think there's some things like that, but it's not
about. I don't think my girlfriend notices when I do anything.
It's not about my gender. It's more about like, you know, comfort and convenience of, you know what? I don't want to make out with you when you have that bushy stash.
Did it ever concern you, or did the thought ever even cross your mind that maybe your partner was just a loyal, dutiful partner who maybe didn't actually feel the way she was telling you she felt?
Not this partner. This partner's really no bullshit. She would tell me. She would have told me, and she would have been like, I can't do this. I'm done. But I have had partners who were like, oof, I don't think I can tell my parents. I don't think I can tell my friends. I don't think that I can. I've had people, you know, I've had people who are like, you know, really tried, you know, and they just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And that's fine too. It's fine. I don't fault them for that. That's not what you're into. I'm not going to ask you to do something you don't want to do. And that's ultimately the thing too, is like, I respect their process in it too, just the same way that I would ask them to respect mine. So
where did you get the name Ian from?
Out of a baby name book. My partner at the time, when I first decided I wanted to change my name, got me a baby name book. We picked three that I liked. One was Ethan, one was Justin, one was Ian. And we went to like TJ Maxx and she yelled out all three names from across the way to see which one sort of, I know this sounds stupid, but when she said Ian, I was like, no, that's it. That's it.
No,
but
you know what? I think that makes sense. Like, one thing I never understood is how people can name a baby before the baby's born. I have this, I don't know if it's metaphysical, I imagine a baby comes out and the name will reveal itself.
I agree. I actually think that you could probably give somebody a name, but later on people should decide who they are.
Yeah.
Not just about their gender, but their name too. I was named after someone who I adore, but I never identify with the name Janet, but maybe I would have like with another name like Casey, which was weirdly my nickname in junior high. Too long of a story, but I moved to a new school and I took on this fake new name that was sort of androgynous. It could kind of go either way. It could go Cassandra or Casey. And I told people that was my name and I signed my papers that way. And so anyway, I mean, I might've been more in tune with something like that than, you know, I think people should decide, you know, who they are, what their name is.
We got to wrap it up. We're coming down to the wire here. Ian, please tell our guests where they can see you and where they can hear you.
Headlining.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes.
Okay, I'm headlining at the Punchline in San Francisco, January 24th, and you can get tickets on my website at ianharvey.com. That's Thursday night, January 24th at the San Francisco Punchline in downtown San Francisco. And there's ticket specials if you go to my website at ianharvey.com. And Harvey is spelled H-A-R-V-I-E.
And tell us a little bit more about the, you mentioned you'd filmed this 1 hour production that's in the works.
It's actually, the show I filmed is a 1 hour comedy special called Superhero, and Margaret Cho executive produced it. And it's, I've just submitted to probably about 100 different film festivals and comedy film festivals around the world, and it will go there first, and then we'll see where it will go after that, and then I'll probably do a miniature version of a Louis C.K. style release on my website for download, probably, I would say, in probably the summer. So, but spring, it'll be touring festivals, and then on my website shortly after that.
Chris, where are you going to be performing?
I got nothing next week, Sal, but if you're in town in February, I got a bunch of great shows. I'll be at Michael's in Burbank. It's a nice, great little show. It's free and everything. So if you happen to be in the area, anywhere near the area, please come by and see me. I'll be there performing there on the 5th and the 18th.
Great. And I will be a special guest commentator on the weekly wrap-up right here on SkidRowStudios.com, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Weekly wrap-up hosted by Ken August. We want to thank our very special guest, Ian Harvey. And we want to thank Wes Hambright and Orange Dog Music. We want to thank Jeremy Hansen, Joe Flickinger, our new sound engineer, Sonia, the lovely Sonia. And thank you for listening to Registered Ear Offenders right here on SkidRowStudios.com in collaboration with Extreme XM 165. My name is Sal Rodriguez.
Chris Zapatero. Oh, hey. Like us on Facebook and check us out on Twitter. I'm Chris Z34.
All right. Thanks for listening.